Signals and Noise is our monthly media segment. We could run a daily media segment in 2019 and never run out of things to talk about. The topics come in that fast and furious. That's okay. There's always plenty to talk about. And we do define media very broadly. We take in items about the media themselves and content delivered over a broad range of media, from virtual reality to books. Our regular guests are here from the communication faculty at Southern Oregon University. Precious Yamaguchi on my left.
Hi.
Andrew
Thank you
Gay.
For having me.
Good to have you. Andrew
always,
Gay on my right.
Always good to be here.
Just a general observation first, because a lot of what we're going to be talking about revolves around the shootings in El Paso and in Dayton. And the fact is that we have gotten so used to shootings in this country that I noticed from watching the late night comedians, I tend to watch the monologues a day later, we're pretty much back to joking, like within a day or two of the event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't have... we don't have the bandwidth to create these spaces for grieving anymore, right? Because they're happening with such regularity that, I was reading a list of, I think it was the top 20 mass shootings in the United States, and Columbine is now off the list.
Really?
And in terms of, casualty numbers. Mm-hmm. And that's just astounding to me, being someone who was in high school when Columbine happened. To think that, how big that felt. And, now we move on so quickly to the next thing. And there isn't that sort of, what is Jimmy going to do in any of the Jimmies?
Right.
Every episode, have a moment of silence. I mean, we're almost to that point of having to build that in.
Truly.
I feel like just having, I used to work in China, and so I taught college classes there. And when we would watch certain films, my students would be horrified mm-hmm. when they would see someone shot, or when we would talk about gun violence, even if it was one person.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a huge contrast, I feel like, to the way that we're almost desensitized here in the U.S., but I feel that the way we are in the U.S. about gun violence is not the norm around the world. Most people are incredibly horrified when a person gets shot, or especially a mass shooting. I feel that even though we're used to the media moving on, that we still grieve, even if it's like a strong type of silent type of grieving. Even when I stepped into Walmart the other day with my son, I can't help but like, oh my God, where would we hide if we saw something?
Right.
Or like, would we like roll into a shelf? And I feel that maybe it's not as visible on the media, but it does take a toll, I think, on us emotionally, everybody.
Yeah, I mean, there's that video that just went viral of, I think it was Times Square, where I think like a motorcycle
had backfired,
and people, there's people panicking, running everywhere. And someone shared that video saying, this is a country that collectively has PTSD right now. I think we all, I think probably Precious as a teacher too, right? When you go into a classroom, you're constantly thinking, all right, what would I do? And I was at Brit Festival last night, I was listening to Jackson Browne. He did an anti-gun song. And I was thinking in my head, what if someone right now,
you think about these possibilities. We've been talking about it in the newsroom ourselves, and in fact, Southern Oregon University offered some training for what to do in your workplace, and we were talking that we probably should take them up on it.
Yeah, we're going to get those again this fall.
This is Precious Yamaguchi, Andrew Gay, and this month's edition of Signals and Noise on The Exchange. As long as we're talking about the general culture and look at violence, as you framed the subject, Precious, why don't we talk now about video games and whether or not, in fact, those do contribute to violence. It was mentioned again by the president and others as a possible contributing factor, but quite a few studies apparently on this, and people just don't find connections from the video games to real world violence.
Right. And also, I mean, films have a lot of violence as well. And also, there's a lot of countries, especially Asian countries, that are really, really into video games, and also European countries, but they don't have that same type of mass shooting violence. So we can't attribute it all to video games. And all of these different mass shooters, they're not all these like hardcore gamers. And so that's kind of, I think, a misunderstanding that, if you're a hardcore gamer, if you're really into these shooting games, that is what you perceive in real life. So there's all different types of media that incorporates violence, but that's not the sole reason.
Yeah, I said to someone that, you know, if, when I see a mustachioed man dressed as a raccoon beating people with turtle shells, I'll believe that video games cause violence. I mean, I think that look at who's blaming video games, right? It is also the same people who really do not want us to talk about gun control, who really do not want to talk about white supremacy. And so I think that this is just another easy scapegoat of saying like, oh, well, here's a problem. And look, I'm someone who's not a big fan of violence in video games. You know, I think there are reasons to talk about violence in video games and the potential harms that that cause. Without trying to, you know, come up with this idea that they're the cause of mass shootings, which they don't appear to be.
But the point is well taken, though, that it's not just video games. You know, look at the other parts of the violence in our culture. I remember what the Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jamie Lee Curtis movie many years ago, True Lies.
Oh, right? Yeah. True Lies.
And I remember we were laughing as the machine gun came down the stairs and shot all those people. But then it was like, is there a problem with us that we do find this funny now? That, you know, with this comedy and people getting slaughtered in large numbers? I mean, I grew up watching the TV shows of the 60s where generally the guys from The Man from U.N.C.L.E. just shot guns out of other people's hands. Mm-hmm. And when the guns actually began to stop hitting the guns and started hitting the people, that was a line we crossed and we haven't gone back.
And I think if we look at our own families and relatives and friends and think of, well, how many people do we know that actually have a gun in their house? It's not just like your typical gamer. It's like women and people of all ages and people that probably shouldn't have guns and people that have anger problems and people, you know, that are like the, it's a huge range. Like my mother has a gun in her house and it's not even hers. It's one of my relatives and she's not like into guns. But I mean, that kind of just goes to show that
they're around us.
They're around us, even if they are not ours.
So, okay, not video games, not necessarily movies, but places where you can park yourself in front of a screen and get agitated. And that brings up subjects like 8chan and 4chan and a couple of sites on the web where people do spend some time venting some fairly awful theories with each other.
Mm. The thing with 4chan and 8chan, they've been around since, like, I feel like as long as the internet has been around, and it's not a site that is, like, really highly moderated or controlled. And pretty much, like, if you go onto 4chan or 8chan, you're going to see something you don't like or that's offensive or just, like, animal cruelty or just disturbing things. And so a lot of times with the attitude with the internet was like, oh, don't take it seriously. It's all for lols, you know, like LOL, LOL, just like joking and trolling. But it has come to the point where people do have to take things, I think, seriously, especially when it's huge acts of violence. And so I think that those areas, they're the same, but also our attitudes have to not just be like, oh, just like for lols.
Right. It's more than just for laughs because people do get.
There's an interview with the creator of 8chan or one of the creators. I'm not sure if it was one person.
Should point out too that 8chan got removed from its server this week, right?
Oh, good. Okay, I didn't know that. Mm. But the creator said that it should. He came out saying, yeah, this is not what the platform was created for. It should, you know, just take it down. But you know, the other thing is, I think you know, these forums where people are posting you know, white supremacist manifestos and stuff like that. It is alarming that they exist. But also, you know, someone took the manifesto of the El Paso shooter and mapped it to clips from Fox News and said, oh, look, it's already out on an audiobook. And it was just clips from people like Hannity and others who were saying very similar language. And you have to ask, like, okay, yeah, there's 8chan, but that is not where the mainstream of this kind of spread of anti-immigrant sentiment is coming from. It's coming from, you know, one of the top media channels that is consumed by a mass audience.
And just to get clear, what happened was that the hardware server providing 8chan service, Voxility, said, this is not appropriate. We're not going to provide this. So 8chan is scrambling for a new place to roost right now. This is Signals and Noise on the Jefferson Exchange. Andrew Gay and Precious Yamaguchi from the Communication Faculty at Southern Oregon University back with us. You're welcome to join our discussion at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So this brings us from 8chan to social media and the idea that social media plays a part too, and certainly people do bark at each other a lot there. President Trump suggested he would work with the social media companies to detect shooters. And I wonder what either of you think of that.
Again, I think that social media can play a role, but that's not the only thing that will help us to decrease mass shootings. There is a study that was done by Michael Stone from Columbia University. He's a psychiatrist, and he has a database of 350 mass shooters within the last several years, and only one out of five have mental illnesses. And so it's not just one thing, like mental illness, or it's not something that is visible on social media, though those things can be contributors, or they can have influence. But I think that so much is going on social media with people having violent language and violent thoughts that how do you monitor every person who's like posting possible acts of what could be violence? And so it has to go much, much deeper than that.
Yeah, it feels again to me like let's try to shift this conversation to anything but to me the major issues, which
things
are
like regulating guns,
regulating guns, and also the certainly in many of these cases, not all of them, but many of these cases, a increase in white supremacist, the FBI has said that the majority of domestic terror attacks are tied to white supremacy.
Let's talk then too about use of social media by other prominent people, because while President Trump was talking about working with the social media companies on trying to identify potential shooters, he also was beginning to run ads on social media, once again mentioning an invasion of
the
country.
That word invasion is just associated with alien, right? And so having a certain type of imagery and language that identifies immigration as a certain type of person, as a certain type of like crossing over the border by foot, and different type of images that we see of different minorities. It's just the language, the imagery is all very problematic. When we have all different variations of immigration, but he definitely goes with this idea that people, immigrants, are like alien invading our country.
Yeah, I mean, and if there is an invasion, again, what is the Second Amendment about? It's supposedly about, militias and defending our country, right? And so if you are speaking to a certain audience of a very passionate gun owner and saying there's an invasion in this country, well, what is the dog whistle there?
Well, yeah, and even the people
defend your land.
Who appeal to the well-regulated militia part would respond to that part.
Right.
You can see how that would get triggered.
Right. And so I think it's interesting. I mean, the New York Times got in some trouble this week because of a headline kind of saying that, kind of suggesting that Trump had, because of this, his teleprompter speech, he's calling for unity and calling out white supremacy. And yet, that's what he says in that one speech. But look at this pattern on Twitter and the kind of language he continues to use in social media and campaign speeches in the media that his campaign is putting out.
So let us bring another political figure in here now, because we got Beto O'Rourke, who is one of the many candidates, two dozen candidates for the Democratic nomination for president, kind of blew his stack on the media this week. He's from El Paso. Mm-hmm. El Paso is in his former congressional district. And a reporter asked him, is there anything in your mind that the president could do now to make this any better? And I'm going to have to edit here a bit. But O'Rourke responded, what do you think? You know the crap he's been saying. He's been calling Mexican immigrants rapists rapists and criminals. I don't know, like members of the press. What the heck? Hold on a second. You know, it's these questions that you know the answers to. I mean, connect the dots about what he's been doing in this country. He's not just tolerating racism. He's promoting racism. He's not tolerating violence. He's inciting racism and violence in this country. So, you know, I don't know what kind of question that is. So I ask this not just from a perspective of, is it okay that Beto O'Rourke swears? Mm-hmm. Whatever Beto O'Rourke wants to do is fine. We have our own responsibilities on the other end as far as licenses. Mm-hmm. But it's a valid question for a reporter.
Mm-hmm.
At what point do you not do the, I'm asking this even though I know the answer because I want to hear a response from you? And at what point do you go in with your own observations up front?
I feel that his response, it was full of like fury and passion, which it should be. And sometimes, especially with El Paso, that we do need to hear that type of fury and like disgust and anger because we feel it, and it oftentimes does maybe get watered down through like professionalism or just how we feel that we're supposed to talk. But really, like that, we should. I think we do all have those curse words and like anger inside of us.
I think the role of the press has been, I mean, I think it's challenging because I feel like we're all sort of the frog in boiling water, right? That I think if any politician 15 years ago had just out of the blue said some of the things that our current president says, it would have been a massive scandal and it would have been covered as such. But I feel like even the media, it's like journalists are so saturated with constant breaking of norms. And so it's become this kind of slow, like, again, we have to cover it from a very neutral standpoint. And so, oh yes, did this thing that the president say, was it racist? Whereas I think, you know, a while ago we would have just said, whoa, what would you say? What is your response to this racist comment?
Yeah, it's a tricky situation, and you're right, I think. I mean, the fact is that, you know, when you talk about the media, reporters are part of the general population. So, right. if we're in the water with the frog, it's all of us in the water there. It's a whole frog pond full of us. Let's move on and talk about not just Beto O'Rourke, but all the Democratic presidential candidates, at least the 20 who got on stage. I mean, it seems like ancient history now, and it's only been, what, a week?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't find them to be particularly memorable debates. To me, I think the big loser so far in both the first two rounds of debates has been the format. You know,
I'm glad you didn't say a person. Because a lot of handicapping there. It's like, oh, lost,
no,
you won.
Particularly the CNN debate felt like every question, it was like, here's the question. A candidate starts the first half a sentence, and it was like, thank you, Senator. Thank you, Senator. You're out of time. Please obey the rules, Senator. It's like constantly there is no actual chance to articulate an intelligent position on anything.
Stephen Colbert's joke about that was that if CNN had been there for the Lincoln-Douglas debate, it would have been, a house divided against itself cannot. Thank you, Mr.
Yes,
Lincoln.
Exactly. Yeah, it's exactly what it felt like. So I feel like that does a huge disservice to voters. I don't know that how anyone could have watched those debates and really walked away feeling like, oh, I learned a lot about that person's position or how that person's position differs from that other person's position. I think that it's served the electorate very poorly, and I think it served most of the candidates poorly. I think, you know, a couple did sort of find their way into that rhythm, but I think overall it was just a bad format.
I feel like it's almost like the Bachelor reality show where it's like, oh, there's a bunch of, you know, smart, attractive people. Which one are we going to choose? And like, which one is everyone going to vote for? But it is that like huge cluster where I actually should probably be more like the Actor's Studio where we really get into a deep conversation and kind of grill the person and listen to them.
Yeah, it's weird when we decry this the soundbite culture that we've gotten into, where, you know, you have to get what you're saying across in 10 seconds and then put 10 people on stage to basically give soundbites,
right,
for the better part of 2 hours. A quick note on some doings in the media business here before we get to the pick threes for this month, and that is Gatehouse and Gannett, two major newspaper chains. Gatehouse buying Gannett. Gatehouse is the company that owns the Register Guard. Gannett owns the There's a registered guard in Eugene, the Record Searchlight in Reading, owned by Gannett. So definitely active in our region. $1.4 billion for Gatehouse to buy Gannett. And, these are companies that are both struggling in the media environment of today. And I guess Kmart plus Sears also comes to mind.
Yeah, it's hard to see how this is good for anyone except for maybe some shareholders. I think we're going to see probably a lot of media professionals lose their jobs. Whether that will be management or the journalists on the street, we'll see. When we see these kind of mergers, we usually see a dilution of local coverage and those kinds of things. So I don't think this is a great news for the public.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
Quick email to get in here from Heidi in Medford talking about racism. She says, this is how Kristallnacht started in Nazi Germany. Thank you for your thoughts, Heidi. So we got about 2 minutes left for pick threes. Why don't we start with Precious?
Yeah, I have a book called Random Family by Adrienne Nicole LeBlanc. It's a really great read of the 90s in the Bronx and how just a lot of people stay within that neighborhood and the gang violence and homelessness and all of the things that were happening during that time. It's a novel, but it also feels very realistic. The new Lion King film is just a way, like a wonderful way to escape from all of this sad stuff happening, terrible stuff. It's great, though. And then also, if you haven't read a Toni Morrison book, at least read a short story. It's called Sweetness, and it was in The New Yorker several years ago. And I feel that she depicts a complicated look at what race is when it comes to intergenerational and family the way that family is when it comes to race.
That was a moving moment when I heard that she had died. And even though I didn't read a lot of Toni Morrison stuff myself, just knowing how other people felt about her made it very significant. Andrew, you got a minute for your pick threes.
Sure. So I've been watching The Return of Veronica Mars on Hulu. I haven't finished it yet, so I can't give it a full endorsement, but it's fun to see Veronica back in action. Kind of an off-field recommendation is a website called justinguitar.com. I'm teaching myself how to play guitar after wanting to do it my entire life. And it's just a great website with lots of videos and lessons, really useful, and it's free. Tips are welcome. And then I went to Jackson Browne last night at the Brit Festival, and he brought out a woman named Leslie Mendelssohn for a duet that they did for a documentary called 5B about the AIDS crisis. The song is called A Human Touch, and it is available for download, and it was a really beautiful song.
All right. Pick threes from Andrew Gay and Precious Yamaguchi, our guests from the Communication Faculty at Southern Oregon University. They join us once a month for our media overview called Signals and Noise. Always great to have you here in the studio.
Thank you for having us.
That'll do it for this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. We'll talk about plastic in hour number two and how to stop using it coming up.